This is KUOW's The Record. On Twitter, at KUOW, I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in. A wake-up call is what Seattle's Chamber of Commerce said last week when Amazon announced it wants to set up a second headquarters in a different North American city. Not everyone had that reaction, including Seattle City Council member Shama Sawant. Thanks for coming in, Council Member.
Thank you.
You said that companies like Amazon are holding us hostage. What evidence do you have of that?
Well, look at the context that we are having this discussion in. Amazon is led by Jeff Bezos, who in July was the richest man in the world and right now has a net worth of $82 billion. Amazon's stock value hovers around $500 billion. And last year alone, they made $2.37 billion of profit. And they've had the ability to preside over the most prime Seattle real estate. And at the same time, the homelessness crisis is exploding. We have an acute shortage of affordable housing. And day after day, tens of thousands of working people who are finding it very hard to maintain a foothold in the city are being pushed out. And in fact, the affordability crisis is now spilled over to the greater Seattle region.
But what makes you think this headquarters announcement is a hostage take?
So, well, if you think about it, it's quite reminiscent of what happened with the case of Boeing. You know, when Boeing moved its headquarters to Chicago, and then all of what's happened since then, it's always been this story where corporations say, well, if you don't give us the most favorable conditions ever, then we will move or we will cut jobs. And the story of Boeing, the moral of the story of Boeing is that the city and the state can do everything they that corporations want, and they will still do what they want. Boeing got the single largest ever corporate giveaway, you know, in late 2013, and they still cut jobs. They still attacked the unions. And so, what is this? This to me seems like really it's like a game show, and the game show host is a multi-billionaire, one of the six richest people in the world, who gets to decide the rules of the game, and he says jump, and the cities are going to say how high.
Also with us, we're talking here with Seattle City Council Member Shama Sawant, and also here to debate what Seattle's response to Amazon ought to be, what should Seattle's relationship with Amazon be, Washington State's Republican Party Chair Susan Hutchison. Welcome back, Susan.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Good to see you again. You said this is Boeing deja vu in a way, right? But what does the announcement by Amazon signal to you?
Well, one of the things that the councilwoman probably doesn't know because she wasn't here at the time, Boeing moved 250 jobs. That's all that moved to Chicago. But what it did was it demoralized this region. It basically brought an end to the 20-year Seattle renaissance that began in 1981. And so as people kind of woke up to this idea that Seattle wasn't as ideal as people thought it was, they began to worry. And that's, I think, what's happening now is people are beginning to worry about what this announcement means.
And didn't Seattle shake off that Boeing announcement and look where Seattle is now?
Well, you know, during that period of time, I call the Renaissance, we had a lot of major companies move into the region. Boeing, of course, had been here for decades. Nordstrom had too, and then it began to expand in a very exciting way. And also Starbucks, Costco, Microsoft, obviously, because that set off much of the Renaissance. But it was also the arts and the culture, which go hand in hand with the success of jobs and growth in the corporate world.
But the council member is saying we gave Washington State, gave Boeing big tax breaks, and they're still regularly pushing jobs out of Washington State and or playing one off the other, playing right-to-work states off of our state. So could we be any friendlier toward Amazon, and would it do any good?
Yeah, you know, I'm part of the Boeing company. My husband worked there for 34 years, just recently retired, and so I know Boeing really well. And, you know, they created a new airplane, and so who was going to build that new airplane? They're not obligated to build the plane anywhere that someone like the councilwoman says they should do. They found a better place to build it with very happy employees who wanted to be the workers on that plane, and they've continued to build out that facility in South Carolina. Just because the Boeing company was founded here 100 years ago doesn't mean that they're obligated to stay here. And I think it's so disingenuous of the councilwoman to say that, because she has made this city so anti-business, so anti-common sense.
She's single-handedly made Seattle
anti-business? Absolutely. She runs that city council. And quite frankly, she's the tail that wags the dog in Olympia with the Democrats.
We're
and
with
all of the problems, homelessness, traffic, drug addiction, and affordable housing, all of those are related to the monopoly that the Democrats have in government in this city.
Let's pause there. That's Washington State Republican Party Chair Susan Hutchison, along with the very powerful city council member Shama Sawant, and Todd Bishop, GeekWire editor and co-founder. Good to see you again, Todd.
Good to see you, Bill.
You report on Amazon and the tech industry, and you said if we're not careful, Seattle could become the next Detroit. What did you mean by that?
I think Seattle and its leaders needs to take a step back and appreciate, as a first step, what Amazon has brought to this community. Now, let me give a big to be sure, and that is the request for tax breaks was not a good move on Amazon's part. It was tone deaf. The notion that this company would go out and publicly request billions of dollars in tax breaks from communities, some of whose Main Street retailers have been decimated by its own success, I think was tone deaf at best.
This was part of Amazon's announcement last week. They said we want it to be a big city, a million plus, and airport access and mass transit, well-educated labor force, universities, available land, and they asked for stable and business-friendly regulations and tax structure, and as you say, incentives like subsidies, tax credits.
Not the best public relations move that Amazon could have made. I think it is on both the city's leaders and Amazon's leaders to take this moment in the city's history to come together to figure out solutions, actual solutions to the civic issues that the council member is raising and all of the problems, the traffic issues, the homelessness. You know, Amazon has done some of that, putting a permanent homeless shelter in one of its new buildings, but it needs to be much more. I think the company should set aside the option for its employees to have something like 10% of their time, almost like Google's 20% time. But with Amazon, it could be devoted to solving civic issues, actual civic innovation. This is the company that figured out how to deliver packages by drone. Why are we in this city not engaging with them to take those innovative minds and apply them to the problems of our city as an example for everybody else? Everybody to do this.
You're talking about engaging with Amazon and Amazon doing voluntary things, though, right?
Yes.
I mean, Councilmember Sawant, you're talking about taxing Amazon, I assume, at a higher rate than we do, not hoping for Amazon to be voluntarily helpful?
Right. And I want to be super clear. Amazon is a peculiar company. They use that word themselves. They are closed off. They do not make this easy. And that is why I'm saying this is on both the city's leaders and Amazon's leaders to step up to solve these problems.
Councilmember, what do you want Seattle to do any differently regarding Amazon than it's doing right now? What's one thing you're calling for?
Well, I don't think it can be boiled down to one thing. Obviously, Bill, you correctly mentioned the question of taxing big corporations. That's definitely true. And in fact, it's a huge problem at the state level that we don't have that. In fact, companies like Boeing and Microsoft effectively pay a negative tax rate, meaning if you count in the subsidies that they get from the most regressive tax system in the entire nation, they actually get more money in their pockets. And you know, I think we have to talk about, first of all, like where we are. I mean, Amazon has issued this, as John Talton correctly called it today in the Seattle Times, potentially an ominous possibility of a loss of jobs from here. But look at the conditions in which this has happened. This has happened at a time when clearly, when I retailed all these numbers, Amazon's net worth, the amount of wealth, just stratospheric amount of wealth that Jeff Bezos and other billionaires have made.
I'm wondering what Seattle should do.
The reason I'm mentioning that is because all of that has happened, and yet the Chamber of Commerce is saying, you know, we haven't said thank you enough, and that it's
that is
too
what
late.
The chair said. We
yes,
haven't said
and,
thank
and,
you,
and it's never too late to say we're sorry. For what? I mean, Are they saying that the policies that have been passed so far because of mass movements, I think Ms. Hutchison attributes too much power to me alone. This is because of mass movements, and certainly it matters that the mass movements have their voice in city council. But on what basis, just monetarily, let's just look at the numbers. On what basis is the Chamber of Commerce saying that somehow there are deplorable conditions for Amazon to thrive and now they are looking for another city? And so the city needs to learn. No, I would say actually the exact opposite. Workers should not say that they're sorry. As a matter of fact, the only solution out of this problem, Bill, is for workers in all cities to reject a perverse race to the bottom. Because think about it. I mean, you talked about some of the features of the request for proposals, but I want your listeners to think about the fact that one corporation issues a request for proposals, an RFP, to entire cities. Who are these cities? These are not just ethereal entities. Cities are made up of hundreds of thousands, millions of working people, most of whom in America, not just in Seattle, are struggling to survive. And one corporation gets to issue an RFP in which they say that one of the incentives they want is tax credits and exemptions. And then in another section of their RFP, they say, if any of these incentives are uncertain or not guaranteed, they say, please describe these factors. Can you imagine the uncertainty that working people face?
I have a quick question I want to get at, and I want to go to Susan Hutchison. You called this announcement ominous yourself, Councilmember Sawant. Are you worried about a loss of jobs from Amazon? What is your goal? Is it for Amazon to leave and pull out and be somewhere else? What is your goal?
My goal, as I've always stated, and it should not be any mystery to anybody, my goal is that working people everywhere in every city in America are able to achieve a very high standard of living, which is clearly affordable.
Okay, so Amazon has made it less affordable here. Are you saying we'd rather not have those jobs?
I don't think it's a question of one person or one billionaire. What's happening with Amazon is symptomatic of the nature of the economic system we live in, you know, in under capitalism, where one corporation has so much power vested in itself that entire cities of millions of people have no rights. I mean, I'll ask you a simple question. When was the last time that the working people of any city were able to issue an RFP to the leaders of that city, the elected officials, saying, we want a city that is absolutely affordable and livable. We want rent.
Okay, well, we do that at the ballot box when politicians run for office. It's an RFP. I want to get from Susan Hutchison. Chair of the Republican Party, should the city of Seattle and Washington State ask anything more of Amazon, demand anything more, tax more of Amazon, more money to pay for roads and buses, more money to offset these home price increases? Should we be asking anything more of Amazon?
Well, my question is, how much money does this city need? Their budget has increased 35% in the last 4 years. Nobody's budget has increased 35%. And all of that is revenue that has come out of this economic machine that is Amazon.
Doesn't that prove that growth doesn't seem to pay for itself? Here we get more congestion and less affordability.
Let's talk about money well spent. That's the issue. And I guarantee you that if we had a Republican mayor and Republican council members, you would suddenly see things getting done instead of the...
Like they're getting done in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I'm not talking about Washington, D.C., but we've got a fantastic group of Republican legislators who have gotten a lot done in fully funded education when the Democrats refused to do it for more than a decade. So the bottom line is that the Amazon machine, the engine of our economic growth in the city and the tremendous job creator that it is, has been very, very good for Seattle. And I don't know what this race to the bottom about workers' conditions. Have you been in those apartments in South Lake Union? A huge improvement over the squalid, empty buildings that were there for years in that South Lake Union area. It was ripe for a company to come in and offer fair market value for the land so that they could build new buildings that were LEED, sustainable, and desirable places for people to work, not to mention all of the support services that surrounds a campus like the Amazon campus. There's no question that there are thousands of jobs that are related to Amazon as well.
Todd Bishop from GeekWire, you brought up you used the word Detroit. Is this a choice between Silicon Valley and Detroit? I mean, what if Seattle just let Amazon diversify itself and build somewhere else? And what if we were more a city on the par of Minneapolis or Pittsburgh or Madison? And those are lovely cities. Isn't the Detroit face a choice awfully unnecessarily stark?
Sure, it is. Those are the two extremes, Silicon Valley and Detroit. But that said, we need to recognize that the dominance of these companies is not permanent. You look at IBM, you look at even Microsoft for a time, Kodak, all of these companies were the Amazons of their time, and look at the cities that they were in. You know, Rochester, New York with Kodak, it's been decimated essentially with the exit and the decline of that company. So we need to recognize that this is not something we can take for granted. And listening to the council member, I am concerned about the tone of some of the rhetoric. I don't think it's constructive. I don't think it leads to actual solutions. I think it plays to the base. It does get people reelected, but ultimately it does not serve the long-term needs of this community, which is what our elected leaders should be doing.
We're taking your questions. What do you want to know about Amazon putting a new headquarters outside of Seattle? Ben asks us on KOW's Facebook page, it's convenient to make this into a political issue, but is it really? Do you think it's possible that Amazon has simply outgrown Seattle and that its business demands a white-collar expansion into another city? So, Todd, is Amazon really, is this really about what Amazon is not getting from Seattle, or is this just a big company putting eggs in different baskets? Are we exaggerating how much this is about us?
I think there is certainly that potential, although it's hard not to take it personally when this company has made this city its home and made a point of building out the urban core and really focusing on Seattle. It's hard not to take it personally living here and caring about the technology community when they say that they need to go somewhere else. It's almost like you've been married to somebody for a while and they decided to start dating. No big deal, honey. I'm going to still stay with you.
Mm-hmm. That's Todd Bishop from GeekWire. Councilmember Shah Massawant, aren't these Amazon jobs exactly the kinds of jobs that we do want here? They're more about innovation than about taking resources from the earth and polluting, and these jobs are more about the future than about the past. I mean, not every company is the same, and isn't Amazon exactly the kind of company Seattle should be courting?
Well, I think that we should be clear that what we should be aiming for, obviously, is a society that does take advantage of technological innovation, economies of scale, and ease of access to goods and services. I don't think that if I was presenting a Luddite backward view or vision of society, anybody would be interested in that. And certainly we would not have built mass movements around my campaigns and actually won significant victories. So really it comes down to what kind of society do you want? Are you willing to accept the status quo, which is what's on offer under capitalism, where the best you can get? I mean, the worst is, of course, completely defunct economies that like Detroit, and that's not what we want, obviously. I think that's very clear.
But you heard Susan Hutchison describe these environmentally thoughtful and high-paid jobs.
The Boeing company and Amazon are to nationalize those companies. So if you don't want to be Detroit, do you want to be Venezuela? You know, that's exactly what they did. And that's why Venezuela is in a spiral and people there are rising up against their government.
That's not why it's happening, but let's stick to Seattle.
It's absolutely true. Your words are not socialist, I have to tell you.
If I might,
Shama,
talk about...
Your words are communist.
Let's hear her
You're
words.
Marxist.
Let's hear her words.
I think let's focus on concrete things. I mean, I think Todd brought up a good point, which is what are the long-term needs of people? Okay, let's look at the long-term needs of people. That really, you don't have to take my word for it. Stop any regular working person on the street or working in a store and ask them, what are your needs? What are their needs? It's affordable housing in a safe neighborhood so that they can raise
Jobs.
Their families in
Jobs.
In a decent manner and offer
Jobs.
their children their
don't
their,
job jobs make that make all that affordable.
Of course, it's jobs. I don't think Ms. Hutchison has come up with something new here. Of course, it's jobs. But it's a question of what section of the society has access to decent living wage unionized jobs. A very small section of the overall population. I'm not in the business of pitting the working people of Seattle against the working people of Minneapolis or Chicago. I don't think that's why I reject this race to the bottom. But the question is, what is the model with which we will be able to deliver living wage, decent living wage unionized jobs with a high standard of living for all workers? And certainly we have seen capitalism miserably fail. Yes, a very, very tiny proportion of workers do get very good salaries if you work in Boeing and Amazon and many other corporations, but the vast majority get left out. And I think that if you look at the way in which corporations produce profits under capitalism, it is not because the billionaires are doing all the work and showing all the creativity and ingenuity. The Boeing executives and billionaires don't build the planes. The workers build the planes. The workers go to work in Amazon and Google and Facebook and make those applications happen. So at the end of the day, you know, Jeff Bezos didn't invent the idea of online shopping. The conveniences, the technological innovation, all of that we want. But what I'm saying is that if you benefit tremendously from this economy, if you're part of the 1%, then you're happy with the status quo. If you're a singularly unambitious person with a very unambitious vision for society, you will accept the status quo. But myself and most of the workers that I know in America, millions, hundreds of millions of them, they actually don't, they're singularly unhappy with what's on offer, which is that corporations make massive profits.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cities are run for profits for a few over people.
Okay.
A few people benefit.
You know, for someone
and the vast
who has
majority
an economics
don't
degree,
gain
I'm just
stunned
by
any benefits.
This
and
idea
so ultimately,
that,
well, let's
so ultimately,
talk,
ultimately, it's not a question.
Pardon me. Can we talk? I want to talk about some specific 62% things.
62% of the company is owned by millions of people, and many of them are teachers, pension savings. Many of them are employees of governments who have pensions. Others are mom and pop who have just been saving with their IRAs. Some of them are my employees who all they have is
out
Sapphire
by
is.
Reality.
They're in their 20s.
Yeah. Everybody listening
so
knows that this is not
true. People are trying
true.
To save for their futures, and they invest in mutual funds or other institutions that allow them to grow a nest egg for their future. That's reality. It doesn't happen without jobs and without economic growth.
State Republican Chair Susan Hutchison, Socialist City Councilman Shah Masawant. We also have GeekWire co-founder Todd Bishop here. Todd, some specifics about what Seattle may or may not do. Do we know that Amazon was annoyed or more by Seattle's adopting an income tax? Do we know that, or just we guessing?
We don't know that specifically, and in fact, that is one of the issues here. Amazon is very closed off and does not communicate publicly. You had to do a lot of reading between the lines in their public website about the HQ2, as they're calling it, to kind of figure out what they're saying here. They're looking for a community that welcomes them, and the implication, at least, is that they don't feel that Seattle on the whole is welcoming to them.
Was I fair to you? I was asking you what Seattle should do, and you were talking about Seattle and Amazon engaging with each other for more creative solutions. Is there something else that you think Seattle ought to proactively do about
yes.
its relationship with Amazon?
I think step number one would be to submit its own proposal in response to this request for proposal.
Seattle should make a bid.
As at least a symbolic move. Now, I don't think that should include the letter of the tax breaks that they're looking for. I think that could be another way to make a statement to them that this is not how we roll here. But
a bid that doesn't include the incentives
yes,
that they're asking.
Absolutely. And see what else they get. There are a very small fraction of cities around the country that can actually afford the kinds of tax breaks that Amazon would want. And I think there's a way to engage with them. And that's what I'm asking for, is the city and the company to work together to figure this stuff out.
Todd, your money is still on Toronto, right?
I still believe it'll be geographic diversity and international diversity that they'll go for.
Susan? And I predict it'll be a no-income tax state, probably a right-to-work state. Texas, Florida, Tennessee would be high on the list.
But would you want to do anything? Why not let Texas be Texas and have let Seattle? Seattle has benefited so much from Amazon already. Could this be the sweet spot where we don't want 50,000 more jobs in the city? We just want what we have, if that.
Well, I think Bellevue should put in a response to the RFP. I think Tacoma. Pierce County. It's a great place to live and work.
The problem is that's the same job market, essentially. And I think one of the things they're trying to accomplish here is to tap into a different labor pool.
Would Canada be unpatriotic?
I just don't see it as more desirable than the work environment in a number of other cities in the country.
You know, I know you've said, Susan, that you think Amazon will go to a more, I don't know if you use the word conservative area, but I thought about you because I saw that on Amazon's list was mass transit, which Republicans tend to oppose. Any thoughts?
I love mass transit.
They even mentioned bike lanes. Amazon, yeah. Tell us where your bike lanes are.
Yeah, I love mass transit, but I don't like the waste that we are seeing with Sound Transit, and everybody sees it. It's one of the biggest problems in the region right now. People feel totally snookered by their cost overruns, the demands for higher and higher taxes for mass transit, which will be out of date by the time it's finished. It's just, it's sickening how the people of this region are being taxed for mass transit boondoggle. And remember, nobody who runs mass transit has been elected. That whole board is a non-elected board, and it's just a travesty. And that's what Republicans object to.
Councilmember Sawant, have you ever had a conversation with an Amazon executive?
I'm happy to if they want to, if they're listening and they want to have a conversation, I'm happy to.
Okay,
but I think, Bill, you brought up a very relevant point. I mean, you said, let Texas be Texas and Seattle can be Seattle. I think that therein lies the problem. I mean, the problem is that as long as working people accept this vision where, you know, as long as there's a state or a country even where labor laws are weaker than they are in Seattle, the workers are in much worse off condition than they are in Seattle or in other better off cities. As long as there is such a place that companies can move to and make their profits, they will do so. So the reality is that we have to move away from that kind of insular vision and understand that this sort of perverse bidding war that starts between cities and states and indeed countries to attract corporations so that corporations can make their profits at the expense of the living standards of working people, that doesn't work. And so the only alternative to that is to do the opposite of that, is that for working people to build mass movements, fight to unionize everywhere, whether it's South Carolina or Washington State, all Boeing workers should be unionized. All workers should be unionized. And we have to argue for democratic public ownership because we do. Because the only alternative to democratic public ownership is what we have today, which is cities, states, and entire nations, the whole world being held hostage to for the profits
of a few people.
You know, we've
tried it. They've tried it your way in a lot of countries around the world. For 70 years, they tried it in the Soviet Union. It didn't work.
Okay, we got to pause there. Seattle City Council Member Shama Sawant, thank you for coming in. State Republican Party Chair Susan Hutchison, we've already talked about stock ownership, and thank you for coming. We really appreciate it. Todd Bishop, last question, is Amazon going to buy Nordstrom?
Jury's still out. It's certainly.
I'm hearing rumbles.
There's an analyst who says that would be next after Whole Foods. The answer to almost every question involving Amazon is yes.
Susan, would you feel any different if Amazon bought Nordstrom?
You know what? I'm a consumer, and I'm a prime Amazon user.
Uh-huh.
I love Amazon. I love how it's revolutionized retail. And I think everybody in the retail sector is beginning to catch up. Competition is great. And there will be a leveling out with Amazon where it is not king of the road anymore because others will catch up. Walmart's working to catch up with Amazon and innovation.
I think Ms. Hutchison's vision of what's happening right now with the status quo is completely out of touch with reality, and which is why you've seen that the vast majority of working people, especially young people, are rejecting the status quo and actually want to fight inequality, want to fight corporate politics. And that is what you're seeing at the political level too. You're seeing those shifts. And so I would not wait for the Republicans, certainly, and not even corporate Democrats to get in touch with reality.
Really
I would urge that workers build mass movements.
The conversation will continue. Susan Hutchison, Councilmember Shama Sawant, GeekWire co-founder Todd Bishop, all reacting to, all having the same conversation maybe you're having at home. How should we feel about Amazon? What should Seattle do now? We'll keep following it. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you,
Bill.
KUOW's The Record. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Bill Radke. Let's continue now with KUOW's The Record. A group of baristas is suing the city of Everett. They say new ordinances banning them from wearing bikinis violate their constitutional rights. The city of Everett says it's not about the bikinis, it's about crimes like prostitution and lewd conduct, crimes that have happened at or around other bikini barista stands. Well, joining us now to talk about this lawsuit is Amelia Powell, who has been working as a bikini barista in Everett for 6 years now. In fact, she's working now at the Hillbilly Hotties stand on 41st and Hoyt, and she's part of a group of baristas suing the city of Everett. Amelia, welcome to KUOW.
Thanks.
First of all, I'd just like to know, why did you decide to start working as a bikini barista?
Well, I started when I was 18. I was doing a full load in school as well as working two retail jobs. And it was really starting to affect my grades. I was stressed out all the time. You know, I was working far over 40 hours a week and, you know, barely making enough to get by. And so ultimately, I made the choice to become a bikini barista so that I was able to work less, make more money. And I've been doing it ever since.
How much money do you make?
I mean, it's dependent. I mean, we have our salary or our wage, and then as well as our tips.
Did you feel any hesitation, and do you still, about being a bikini barista, about wearing something that your customers want to look at while you're trying to, you know, do your schoolwork and get by?
Absolutely not. You know, I have struggled my entire life with some pretty serious body image issues and just having confidence in myself. And, you know, that was hard for me at first. But as over the past 6 years, as I've worked as a bikini barista, it's actually given me a sense of empowerment and confidence that years of therapy never did.
Why? What gives you empowerment and confidence?
You know, just the freedom to be able to go to work and, you know, dress how we want, get dressed all cute. And, you know, after having people tell you all day how great you look, eventually you start to believe it yourself.
You mentioned the ability to dress the way you want to. And some of the women who have joined this lawsuit are saying that the ordinance violates their constitutionally protected freedom of expression. Do you feel that way? And how does a bikini ban violate your freedom of expression?
Absolutely. Because ultimately, you know, we make the decision to work as bikini baristas. We want to be bikini baristas. We want to wear our bikinis. And we want to be able to have the freedom to work as we wish.
Is there something you're trying to express when we talk about freedom of expression? Is there something you're expressing? Is it just expressing your confidence?
Expressing our personalities, you know, our individual sense of self.
The assistant city attorney in Everett said it's not about the bikinis, it's about the criminal conduct that's going on around these stands, including your employer, or, well, maybe not your specifically, but that employers have felt that they can pressure employees like you to expose themselves, et cetera, that you're being protected here. Would you acknowledge that happens, that employers sometimes abuse bikini baristas?
That is absolutely not true. There have been cases in the past where stand owners have done that. She was charged criminally and is no longer a stand owner. This was dealt with years ago. And since that time, we have not had any issues. I never worked for her specifically. My boss personally is absolutely wonderful. And no, they don't pressure us to do anything that we do not want to do.
The other problem the city of Everett says is that there's, even if you're not being pressured to do anything wrong, that they're documenting lewd conduct and prostitution and even drug deals at these stands and nearby, and that the laws on the books, they say, the city of Everett says, haven't worked, that they're trying to go at the original source of the problem, which apparently is the customer's reaction to what you're wearing, according to the city.
Well, What's funny about that is they say that they are currently documenting these things. No, they previously documented these things years ago, and now they're trying to run them as something that is currently going on, which is absolutely not the case. As far as... I kind of forgot what the rest of the question was.
Well,
there.
Do you get pressured inappropriately by customers?
When a customer, you know, tries to pressure you, I know personally, I have called the police in the city of Everett to come take care of a customer that was being just a little too persistent. And the Everett City Police did not show up to help me, but they can drive through the parking lot every hour to check to see what I'm wearing.
You're saying police are interested in seeing bikinis, more interested in
no,
that than enforcing?
That's not what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying that they have been driving through every hour to
check
to see that we are compliant with the regulation.
Gotcha.
Although in the instances with me personally and some of the other girls where we have called them for their help, they don't arrive to help us.
How often does that happen, that you get pressured or propositioned?
Very rarely.
You know, I'm listening to this. You know, I have daughters too, Amelia, and you talked about the confidence that you've found in yourself, in the idea that you're looking good and people tell you so, and that has a positive effect. You know,
absolutely.
What about getting your confidence from someplace that has nothing to do with what you look like or how other people react to you?
Well, ultimately, my confidence within myself personally and with my mind, with my intelligence, I don't have problems with that. My issues with my confidence was specifically with my physical body.
What happens if this lawsuit, if you lose the lawsuit, Amelia, you're not allowed to wear a bikini at work? What do you do?
Well, I hope that doesn't happen. But in that case, I think that I would, you know, possibly have to find another job, which is something that I don't want to do.
You think this would hurt your tips? Is that the big issue?
I think it has hurt my tips.
You're already seeing that.
Yes.
Well, Amelia, we really appreciate your telling us your story and also giving us your side of this lawsuit, you and other baristas suing the city of Everett over requiring that you put more clothes on, show less skin. That's an issue going on in Everett, and it's being considered other places. Thank you for your time, Amelia.
Thank you.
Amelia Powell, I've been working as a bikini barista in Everett for 6 years now, part of a group suing the city over that ordinance. The lawsuit was filed today. We did reach out to the city of Everett to comment on this lawsuit, and they were unavailable for an interview today, but they'll be sending us a statement later in the day. And if you're wondering, what is the deal? I have seen bikini baristas many places around the Sound. One of our listeners asked KUOW's local Wonder Team to investigate that. Are bikini baristas a Pacific Northwest phenomenon? We'll tweet out a link to the story that we produced in response to that question. We'll tweet that out now at KUOW. It's The Record on KUOW 94.9 Seattle. Tweeting at KUOW, I'm Bill Radke. U.S. and Japanese troops are training for urban combat today near Mount Fuji, preparing for what officials call a grave situation after North Korea's missile and nuclear tests. The possibility of war is on the mind of reporter Natalie Newcomb. She's on KUOW's youth media team, Radioactive. Every year, Natalie visits her grandmother in Japan. When she's here, she hears a common phrase there. The best way to avoid another war is to learn about the past wars. The best way to learn is to listen to a survivor's story. So Natalie asked her grandmother in Japan, what was it like to be a teenage girl in World War II?
This is my grandma, Kazuko Nita. I call her Achan. Achan knows I'm not good at cooking, and my knife skills are horrible. This fall, I'll be going to college and living by myself. So Achan decided to teach me how to cook and cut cucumbers thin.
Yatte
goran. Okay.
It's really difficult to cut the cucumbers thin and cut them quickly. But as she says with everything, Achan tells me I need to do it over and over again. Then I will get it. After eating the cucumbers I cut for breakfast, we turn on the TV, and the TV announcers begin to talk about the war in Syria, while showing horrible scenes of people suffering. This year, my grandmother will be turning 86. She survived World War II. I talk with Achan all the time, but she doesn't talk about the war often. Most of what I know is through my American history classes and watching Japanese TV. So I pulled out some of her favorite chocolate cookies and tea, and I asked her to tell me her story. Achan was a teenager at the time World War II started, only a few years younger than me. She tells me it began on December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor. She was sitting in front of the radio with her parents.
I was horrified. You get into the war with a country that big. You know you're going to lose. What chance would we have to win?
As the war heated up, there were many soldiers dying on the front.
As a town, we would welcome the dead home. When we would get the box, it didn't really have their body or ashes in it, because they didn't know where they actually died. Then we would come together and sing.
The song is about young boys going to war and sacrificing their lives. Tears streamed down her cheeks. I have never seen Achan cry before.
Even I'm going to cry if I sing that. The mom held the box so tightly. That's how the soldiers came home. I really don't think they wanted to die.
Achan's everyday lifestyle began to change. Classes were canceled, and she was told to help the war effort by gathering supplies.
I never thought about it. We didn't think about whether it was good or not. We just did what we were told.
One day, school ended early because of another American firebomb alert. Achan's friend went home and hid in a bomb shelter in her yard. When the bomb raid came, the bomb hit Achan's friend in the head. It killed her.
Everyone is used to it, so when everyone went home, we said be careful so a firebomb won't hit you.
Her parents were worried for their lives, so they moved from a big city, Kobe, to the countryside where there were less bomb raids. As the war was almost over, Achan explains that they began to do firebomb drills, even in the middle of nowhere. They would pretend a house was on fire
and throw the water onto the targets on the house. Then my father came and he said, once you start doing this in the middle of nowhere, that's when you know you will lose.
Soon after, the war ended. The American government came to Japan. Drastic changes were made to the Constitution and created the democratic state that we know today. I got up to boil some water as my grandmother's cup of tea was almost empty. She gave me a few words that stood with me. She told me, in a world where war is becoming more dangerous and more common, you have to remember something.
Don't do war. It's the children and the women who hurt the most. Never do war.
Another phrase people say in Japan is there will never be enough paper to properly explain what happens in war. There has been so many wars, and if we learn from our past mistakes, can't we avoid another one? So we need to listen to survivor stories. We finished eating up our chocolate cookies and tea, and Achan asked me what I wanted to eat for lunch. I wanted cucumber salad, so cutting practice began again. But I had to hurry because our favorite comedy show was going to start soon. From Radioactive, Natalie Newcomb.
Natalie produced that story for KUOW's Radioactive Youth Media. Her mother translated. And you'll find more youth-produced stories on the Radioactive podcast or at KUOW.org/radioactive. Coming up, a $1,000 iPhone and a Seattle Seahawks offense that wasn't worth nearly that yesterday. Stay tuned. KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Apple is supposedly about to announce a $1,000 iPhone, and Russell Wilson is launching a new startup in Seattle. So let's bring back GeekWire co-founder Todd Bishop. Hi again, Todd.
It's great to be back, Bill.
Yeah, good to have you back. Been too long. Why would I pay $1,000 for an iPhone? I have an iPhone, Todd. Why would I pay anything near $1,000?
That's what Apple. That is what Apple is going to have to prove tomorrow. The gist of this phone, there are a couple key features. One is that it's an edge-to-edge OLED display. So the whole idea being that you're going to be able to have actually a smaller piece of hardware or a relatively small piece of hardware, but a giant screen on it because they're taking away the bezels around the edge. Now, this is the...
Oh, well, you didn't tell me they were taking away the bezels. How many thousands do I need to pay?
The other big thing is the new Face ID feature. So no more pressing your thumb onto the fingerprint reader. You actually just look at it, and in 3D, it recognizes you. Supposedly foolproof in terms.
Yeah,
of,
how accurate are those?
Yeah, well, if it's 3D, a 3D face scan, it's going to recognize your face.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, $1,000 for a phone, this is a new high mark, especially when you've got others like T-Mobile just came out with a new phone for $150. You know, that's a perfectly good Android phone. You're really seeing kind of a stratification of the smartphone market. The short answer to your question is, boy, this is going to be potentially a tough sell for Apple. The super fans are going to be in line for this, pre-ordering it. And beyond that, I think they've got a case to make.
Don't companies sometimes roll out a ridiculously high-end thing as kind of a statement?
That's right. And that is a good point here, because one of the other pieces of news or rumors in advance of this announcement on Tuesday is that Apple will be releasing upgrades, more modest upgrades to the iPhone 7, and the iPhone 7 Plus, perhaps calling them the iPhone 8, but something for the rest of us, for the unwashed masses to put our hands on.
The $1,000 one makes the other one look cheap.
Exactly.
By comparison.
Exactly.
What's the name of the fancy one?
They're calling it the iPhone X, at least that's the rumor, that it'll be called the iPhone X. You never know with Apple. They could change this tonight at their rehearsal, although it might be a little bit difficult with things already getting out into the retail channel.
Yeah.
But this is essentially their high watermark to see where. And, this is also a moment for Apple under Tim Cook to try and show some real innovation here. And, they have been iterating on the iPhone and trying to make it better. Can they do something that's truly breakthrough? And that is one of the key questions tomorrow.
All right. The iPhone 1K or whatever it's going to be called coming up. Do you think Amazon's ever going to take another whack at phones?
I'd like to see them do something on the low end. I think Alexa was, in my view, originally intended for a phone, and it's only because the Fire Phone flopped that Amazon was forced to put Alexa into what turned out to be its own breakout hit, which is the Echo devices.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them come back. The problem with the Fire Phone, don't get me started on this, Bill, but the problem with the Fire Phone is it's too fancy. They needed to go simple, and I'd like to see Amazon come back on that.
Sorry for getting you started.
That's okay.
Microsoft, they're going to ever be competitive with iPhone?
No, Microsoft's done. I mean, they do have their own Windows phones still, to be clear. They have some, but they're targeting corporate markets and edge cases where they can really show a difference for some users. Things like phones that can also double as a computer. You plug it into a large monitor and it scales across both.
Got it. Topic number two, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson has launched a new startup company in Seattle. What's this about?
Well, it's called TraceMe, and it is an app for superfans to connect with celebrities and pro athletes, starting with Russell Wilson. It's free for now. The whole idea, though, is it will eventually be a paid or subscription app. And Russell Wilson, let me say, has a much better roster of investors behind him than he has linemen in front of him.
For those who don't know, you just got back from a fun weekend. Russell Wilson and his offense failed to score a single touchdown in Green Bay yesterday.
That's right. So they have investors, including some of the folks like Jeff Bezos is one of the investors in this through his investment arm. Madrona Venture Group, and it's being spun out or incubated within a group called Pioneer Square Labs. There is a who's who of tech investors behind this company. They've invested $9 million in this company, TraceMe, which Russell Wilson is the chairman of.
Let's see, let's dip into a little TraceMe. Let's see what Russell had to say to his super fans on his new app.
Tough loss tonight. But it was a true battle to be back in Wisconsin. Obviously, all my Badger fans, I'm so grateful for you guys, love y'all. But all the Seahawks fans that were there, all the 12s, we're grateful for all y'all's support. And we're going to be back. Can't wait to come back home and play at Century League. I thought we battled really, really well. I thought the defense did a really good job of playing as hard as they could. So. It's going to be an exciting year. Just we got to stay the course.
Todd, this sounds like a bad post-game news conference, except harder to hear.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. What
is that part?
I'm sure he says he must be doing other things besides saying tough loss.
That's right. You do get kind of a behind-the-scenes glimpse of his life, and you can see his workout regime. You can see him talking with other personalities, other big celebrities. This was inspired by his visits to Seattle Children's Hospital and his desire to let people who are close to him or who meet him or are his super fans follow along with his life and sort of let them connect with what he's doing.
So he's giving all his profits to charities like Children's Hospital.
There is no word of that. This is a commercial venture. And in fact, a lot of these investors that are putting this money into this company, they are not doing it out of philanthropy. So eventually when they start announcing their business model, it'll be interesting to see.
You say he's got a who-who of investor. A who's who of investors. Does he have a who's who of celebs who are already in part of his company, and you can meet who?
So for now, it is just him. But the idea is...
And his wife, maybe.
Yes, and his wife, Sierra.
Yeah.
But the whole idea is to expand this over time to other celebrities and to make this more of a platform for celebrities to connect with their super fans.
All right. And we'll see if Russell Wilson also launches a successful touchdown drive next week, remains to be seen. Who do they play next? Anyway, any idea?
Wow, you just hit me with the one question I can't answer.
How could we possibly know? Who? 49ers?
I think they've got a shot.
That's Todd Bishop. He co-founded the Seattle tech news site GeekWire. He talks to us about Amazon and Russell Wilson and $1,000 iPhones, and we just love to share your wisdom. Thank you, Todd.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Go 49ers. Go everybody. Wouldn't it be ideal if nobody had to lose? We've got more of The Record coming up tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in.